couple of years ago, I had Alec Newald on the program as a guest. Alec wrote a book called Co-Evolution, and it was re-released in 2011. It's been picked up by my good friend Duncan Rhodes at Nexus Magazine. It's available through Nexus Magazine. It tells the story of Alec. Well, why should I tell the story once again? Because we have Alec here with us this week as our special guest, Alec Newald. But it's not the journey so much as what happened to him when he was taken off planet. It's the ramifications that came into his life when he came back. He would have thought he would have been sort of fated in some way, but oh no. The powers that be had other plans for Mr. Newell. Alec, good to talk to you again.
Always nice to talk to you, Barry. This, you know, you realise that this has sort of been a 4 and 8 year scenario. I think the last time we talked for your radio program was about 8 years ago. And then we met up at Nexus, of course, 4 years ago, and now another 4 years has slipped by.
I know.
So it's one of those, leap year things.
Yeah, one of those leap year things. It's quite amazing, isn't it? 4 years ago, 2011, when the second anniversary of your second edition of your book came out, we were at the Nexus conference, and we sat down to have a good old chat about things like that. But some dramatic things occurred then and still are. But now, look, since you and I spoke on radio out there, there's been a lot of new people join us on the program. So I thought that it might be interesting if you could just quickly bring us up to speed with the background. You wrote a book called Co-Evolution, the extraordinary but true story of one man's visit to an alien civilization. And it's not as if you sort of are an offshoot of NASA or something, but you had your own very, very interesting and deep adventures. Can you give us a bit of a thumbnail sketch on that?
The original, I call it an adventure because it's a little bit hard to describe it as anything else. It started in 1989, so it's 26 years ago now. And things, even though I'll never forget this, but details are still sketchy to recall when you go back that far in time. It was on a drive, a familiar drive between what I was used to drive a lot between Rotorua and Auckland. It was about a 3 or 4 hour drive at a casual pace. And when I actually got a chance to connect with real time, I'd lost 10 days on that drive, which was like pretty dramatic. So dramatic, in fact, that, you know, I even went and got myself checked out medically to make sure that, you know, there wasn't something more obvious going on there. But all I can say is genuinely I'd lost 10 days in that drive, and I over a period of time recovered quite a lot of detail, memory of that lost 10 days. In which case, even though I don't like the term alien abduction, certainly I was removed from planet Earth for that period of 10 days. I term the phrase alien recovery because in the last sort of 20 years of studying my own personal case and trying to come to grips with it and the memories of information that was placed in my head during those 10 days, it appears that some past life experience, I actually was a non-human, if we could put it that way, and the alien race that actually picked me up those 25 years ago were, I could say, ancient ancestors. So it was an alien recovery rather than a human abduction, which is, I think, a far more friendly way to look at it.
And you're catching up with long-lost relatives.
In a way, yes. And I think if people actually did a bit more deep research into their own, and these are own, I'm talking about alien experiences they've had, and there's plenty of people that have written books and gone on to open declaration of such things. I'm sure if they could find a source, whether it has to be hypnotherapy or regression or whatever, they might find that there's connections in our human lineage, which is very, very much strongly related to other alien races. So having a abduction experience can quite often be family calling, just like near-death experiences. I think you're closer to the mark on that rather than alien abduction. So that's a less scary way, I think, of describing an alien experience.
Well, I think that's a good one, Alec, because, I mean, you know, we're doing a lot of past life regression work lately. I'm starting to do a bit more in this again myself, and I've done it for my own books. And to go back into a past life on this earth, more and more people are accepting the fact that, yes, we do have reincarnation. But in my own book research, I've found that, yes, we do go on and live on other worlds. So there's no reason to assume that having lived here on earth and then moved to other worlds that we shouldn't come back again. And I find that whole concept completely normal, if you like. So I don't see why we should start throwing our hands up in the air and saying, oh, what a load of old science fiction nonsense this is. So your experiences there, when you were actually invited, shall we say, albeit fairly suddenly from your car, into an alien craft and taken on an adventure, your experiences were, well, wonderfully described in your book Coevolution, but they were definitely life-changing, weren't they?
Well, I don't think you can have one of these experiences without thinking more deeply about not only your own, sort of like who am I, what am I. I think I've read quotes before, like people travel all around the world, climb mountains, have all sorts of adventures, and they never actually stop for a moment and consider who or what they are, actually. I think the biggest adventure we can have is to learn about our own lineage or what is humanity.
Yeah.
You know, what are our capabilities and where did we come from in the first place? Because most certainly during this experience, being, if you like, instructed by people from off-planet, and it gave me a far more crystallized sort of observation of my own life as a human being, and certainly I think most of the human history has been hidden from us, and I think this whole adventure to be discovered if people just go and study where did the Homo sapiens come from in the first place, which I think one of the reasons I call my book Coevolution is because evolution on a Darwinian theory I think is not an accurate description of how we arrived here. We were certainly suddenly appeared in the evolutionary line, and only a couple of 100,000 years ago, which even the Darwinian theory that breaks all the rules. So we just sort of appeared in the strata, and I just urge people to research their own history before they condemn people describing adventures of non-human relationships, if you like, because we came here from somewhere, I'm pretty sure, and it wasn't just a natural effect of evolution. So that alone describes most of the alien experiences, I think.
Yeah, yeah. In your book, I was just reading the chapter again this morning before we had a chat, you're talking about the fact that the human brain has evolved far more than is really necessary. So why would that happen under the rules of a Darwinian construction, shall we say, or evolution? And that just makes total sense because, as Einstein said, we use about 10% of our brain. A few other people have challenged that. But even so, our brain is bigger and far more capable of things than we can even imagine at the moment. And you, as you say, why?
Yes, it's almost like it's waiting to be fired up, like somebody needs to flick the switch.
Yeah.
And as you know, an evolutionary process is supposed to come from need. So when a need presents itself, the evolutionary process takes care of it. But of course, how do you preempt the need? And that seems to be our human consciousness seems to be capable of far more than we're using, so therefore it's preempting a need. That creates a whole lot of questions too, which I think science doesn't want to go into.
That's exactly right.
Getting back to a condensed version of that 10-day off-planet adventure, because this was just a precursor to what we want to talk about. As I just described, I was given a quick course in human history, and of course that involves, you can't get into human history without getting into extraterrestrial history, because human and extraterrestrial interactions have been going on this planet since life evolved here. So I was quickly shown that, and that of course opened up my eyes to a whole wider field of, yeah, of endeavor. But, you know, they took me to their planet, they showed me how they lived, they showed me perhaps how we could be living, and bringing back that sort of information it cramps your style in a way, because I don't live a perfect life, and
so
there's
who
a
does?
Lot of people that are making money out of an imperfect life. And of course, if you're going to crack the code or break down our lifestyle into what we should be doing and what we could be doing, it all comes down to money. And I haven't got the wherewithal to take on huge financially backed enterprises which are instructing us in how to live. So
yeah, but then again, it is a personal choice. Alec, I mean, they can tell us how we should be living, and it doesn't matter whether it's a government or whether it's a medical authority or any other scientific area. They can tell us how, but it's still up to us whether we wish to embrace that and whether we want to go down this mainstream medicine or alternative medicine, for instance. So we still do have choices. It's just a matter of whether or not we're bright enough and independent enough to think for ourselves. And maybe that's something that more and more people are discovering, like yourself.
Well, I hope so, Barry. And I think that was one of the prime objectives of picking me up. I was obviously going to be living a life on Earth, and that I believe is a chosen course. I do believe we choose our future careers wherever we might be born or live. It's just a feeling I have that feels right to me. But I mean, a lot of people would argue about that. But choosing a difficult course of life may be a lesson that one needs to learn. I don't know.
Hmm.
But certainly, when I was deposited back here with a head full of knowledge of alternative ways of doing things, I guess talking about it to people was. One of the only courses I could take. I didn't have any money, and I didn't have any wherewithal or clout with anybody in high authority. So talking at a lower level, people face to face, going onto programs like your own on radio out there and chatting with Duncan Rhodes at Nexus magazine and that, and having small snippets of my experience published there, was in a way, I guess, opening the world up to my experiences and my interpretation of what we could do given an opportunity of a different lifestyle.
Mm.
I think that was the pretext of the whole alien interaction, was to put me back here with a different mindset. And if my life previously had been alien of some description, it is amazing that we can be born here and completely forget all our past experiences. It makes it a true challenge. So I think I've had a privileged experience, and I've had a chance to readdress my past lives and be fully conscious of them while I'm living this life. So now I've got two worlds to contemplate, Barry. That's the most difficult thing. And trying to convey that to the general public, I've tried every which way I could possibly conceive to get the message across that things are not quite what they appear to be on this planet. And I've done it in a perhaps a modest way, too modest. I think, honestly, I've been too kind to the people listening to me. I think I really need to make a bolder statement, and that's what we really are trying to do. We're leading into a new project that I'm going to be involved in, a new video documentary.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about that.
We're going to talk about that. With the Coev experience.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that in just a few moments. Just before we take a break, though, I think the point that you made earlier on about relating this to a near-death experience has become very evident to me in the last few minutes of us talking, that yes, you've come back from that, same as a near-death experience, and your life is never the same again. So we must be able to draw comparisons between the two. And if people are having these experiences, whether they be NDEs or whether they be off-world experiences or even on-world experiences with other civilizations and other people from these other civilizations, then there has to be a reason for all this, Alec. And I think that what you're doing is fantastic. And your book, Coevolution, is just the beginning. Anyway, look, let's take a quick break here now and then come back and find out about where we are now, because, as you said, you have an exciting project coming up. You're listening to Radio Out There, and our special guest this week is Alec Newald. Back shortly. We've sort of touched very, very briefly on your out-of-world adventures, but I do encourage people to read your book, Coevolution, which is available through. You can get onto the Nexus magazine site, and there are other places, I guess. Have you got your own website on that?
I have, actually, Barry, yes. I resisted, actually, because I'm a sort of a non-commercial entity in as far as this experience was concerned. I felt it was sort of like almost indecent to promote myself and my own experiences, and I've really allowed other people to do that for me. Strange, I don't know what it is within me. I mean, I'm a businessman in the real world, and I've always looked after myself and made my own way. But I felt somehow that I shouldn't commercialize this experience. I felt it was beyond that. But unfortunately, by hanging back, I mean, nobody else has got the incentive to promote this more than me. I've probably done myself an injustice in not promoting it I don't say commercial way, but in a way to reach more people. And I've sort of been an enigma, I think, in the abduction world or the ET world. Everyone knows about everyone else's experience, but when they talk about mine, or when my name is raised, I've had one of the most dramatic, I think, and one of the most interesting experiences extraterrestrially related. Nobody's heard of it. It's such a strange situation to be in. So a few years ago, I did set up a little website. I'll give you the link later. You can put it on your radio thing if you like. It's just coevwebs.com, coev.webs.com. It's just a website which I could freely make up my own site and put on it my own blog, which sort of keeps people up to date. Or the major things that are happening in my life.
But
basically, for 10 or nearly 20 years, I never had a website. So it shows you how almost disinterested I was in my own experience, if that means anything to anyone.
Well, now that you're coming out, as it were, we won't say out of the closet or anything, but out of the spaceship, now that you're coming out, I mean, if you're going to have these experiences, at least you've got to be able to share them. And it's not as if you're doing it in a commercial venture that you're suddenly trying to shout off the rooftops, but you've got to get the word out there, otherwise what's the point of having the experience? But now you've reached a stage where you're prepared to talk about and make a film about some of the events that happened after you returned to Earth with the authorities, and you and I have spoken privately about this several times, and I know that they've given you a pretty heavy time. Now, you're looking at producing a documentary film at the present stage. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, well, because the book was written in a friendly vein, I wasn't going to include all the negative events that happened to me over my life connected to this experience, because the actual off-world experience was extremely friendly and benevolent, and there was nothing negative about any of that. All the bad stuff happened when I landed back here, when the authorities got hold of me, found out what had happened, and wanted to grill me for information about, I guess, not only the potential dangers of alien capabilities or their abilities to perhaps protect themselves or their weaponry. I mean, the whole of gambit of humanity seems to be bigger and better weapons to kill humans with. And I guess part of their need to know was what did I see of alien abilities to defend themselves, or there were other things going on this planet which I wasn't even aware of, hardly touched on during my off-world experience, but which covert agents, which I unfortunately had to rub shoulders with soon after my experience, were well aware of. And there was a connection between my off-world experience and some pretty weird stuff, I'd call it artificial intelligence, and other weaponry that had been buried on this planet from eons ago, perhaps very ancient weapons from wars that had been fought on this planet maybe hundreds of thousands of years ago. Just like landmines are still found in Vietnam, and children and adults have legs and arms blown off from weapons that have been buried in the ground for 20, 30, 40, 50 years. Still, there are extraterrestrial and ancient civilizations on the planet that have buried weapons underground, and they're still there. And unfortunately, they could be tripped at any stage of time. Well, it's the subjects of that ilk that this documentary is mainly going to be about, because these are very real dangers to humanity should these weapons be unleashed, or accidentally even unleashed on the human race. It could transform this planet overnight. So the time, I think, has come for me to be a little more open with some of the more negative aspects of my experience. And as I say, none of this is really concerned with the extraterrestrial off-world part of my experience. So it was never included in the first manuscript. But people I've met since that date in the early 1990s, because some people may not know that I was imprisoned and interrogated for 6 months over this experience. That's how real it is. And I've been really modest and tried to downplay the dangers that contactees can find themselves in when covert agencies start getting in the mix, because they are of a military basis, but they're above the law. They will stop at nothing to get information, and they will use any means at their disposal. Mm. And locking you in jail and then interrogating you almost to a point of, I can't quite describe it. But anyway, it's not a nice experience, and I tried to keep that out of the main storyline. But nevertheless, it's there, and this documentary will unravel a lot of what's been going on to the peril of humanity, I might add, Barry, without exaggerating. We touched on the Falklands War, and David Griffin did a slight reveal on some aspects of the Falklands War, which was directly connected with my experience.
Tell us who David Griffin is, Alec. Can you tell the audience who David Griffin is?
David Griffin is an independent researcher out of the UK who took on my case, I think, mostly because he had heard the Nexus conference talk I gave in 2011, where I mentioned the Falklands War, not so much in the Falklands War, but at Thule Island, which is in the South Sandwich Islands, just south of the Falklands War. And I sort of hinted that it was one of the major reasons the Falklands War even took place. And he took it on his own back to research anything he could find from the Ministry of Defence files in England, in the UK, on the Falklands War, and especially concentrated on Thule Island, which used to be an alien base. And the Argentinian government or military set up a base on top of that island as well as a military experimental base. The British forces, after they'd finished with the Falklands War at in the main islands of the Falklands, came down and did a number on Thule Island. They They blew it apart, basically. They blew up the scientific station that the Argentinians had on it, and they also went looking for this ET base and flushed the ETs left. They flushed them out and blew it up, from all accounts. And David came across some very interesting files in the Ministry of Defence in the UK, even to the point where that file is locked down for, I think, 60 or 40-year lockdown on that case,
yeah.
Where you cannot get to the treaty of the Thule Island fighting. The treaties for all the rest of the Falkland Islands are fully available for the public to peruse, but the one on Thule Island is locked down in secret mode. So if you need sort of confirmation that something underhanded was going on in Thule Island, I think that's a little hint towards it anyway, Barry.
So how did he discover the information?
Well, he spent many, many days and weeks and hours just doing the Ministry of Defence files that were made public due to, you know, the Public Secrecy Act is frees information up every 30 or 40 years. He got into those files and searched through and found a lot of this information. Plus, I was guided in that direction by a South African intelligence agent, which grilled me while I was in prison.
Talk about him because he was a huge part of your story because you've sent me the outline of it, which I find absolutely fascinating. And this man sort of, well, it was almost like you were put in Guantanamo Bay or something like this for so many months. I mean, here you were, as you say in your notes, more like a prisoner of war rather than a civilian prisoner. And all this because you happened to have an off-world adventure. So it shows the level of fear, doesn't it? But tell us a bit about this guy because, well, for a start, he sort of made his presence felt when he walked in the cell door, didn't he?
He was someone that, out of respect to his family, because I grew some sort of an affinity with him after what we could call a fencing match for several days. So I've kept his name out of it for respect of his family, but yeah. He has since, I believe, passed on. I called him House. His nickname with me was House for very obvious reasons. When he walked in the room, he always had to duck his head, or he did have to duck his head to get in a 6'6" door jam. So he was close to 7 foot tall, I would imagine, and he was built like Mr. Universe. You know, he was built like the proverbial outhouse, which is sort of what a brick outhouse at that. You know, he was a monstrous man.
And his
color. But there was more to him than that.
Yeah.
He was very unusual.
Yeah, tell us about, he also had a very obvious color about him as well.
Well, he was like an albino, I guess would be the easiest way I could describe him to someone. But if you're describing something you've never seen before, there's nothing to compare it to.
Yeah.
He was human-looking, obviously, extremely strong-looking, and he had a hair that was silvery, but almost glowed. It was so shiny, and his skin was almost translucent. You could say that he looked like he'd never been out in the sun in his life. He was definitely an oddball in every aspect, size alone, but he sort of had a presence about him. Like, I felt like he was trying to read my mind from the moment he walked in the room. And I only quote that after having had an alien experience where mind reading was the norm. You could almost feel people reading your thoughts. And I'd had 10 days experience of that.
Yeah.
So I felt this prickle that you get inside your consciousness when someone's trying to feel inside your head, trying to lock into your innermost thoughts. I had that feeling for 10 days. So I knew straight away that this guy was trying to read my mind. The other advantage I'd had with 10 days with an alien sort of family was that I had learnt how to block a lot of that off. It was almost imperative to do that, to have any secrets, or not secrets, but have any personal thoughts. So I'd been schooled, in a way, on how to blank someone's protrusion into your mind. So we had this almost subconscious war going on from the moment he walked in the room. He was trying to get inside my head, and I was trying to keep him out. So straight away I knew there was something different about this guy, and that's not even, I'm not even touching on the technology he'd brought with him in a rather strange briefcase.
Yeah, and you said he also had a South African accent.
I might not give everything away here, Barry.
Yeah, you said he also had a South African accent.
Yes, I knew straight away. We have quite a few South Africans living in New Zealand. The Afrikaans sort of accent's very strong and gives them away straight away. They hardly have to say a word, and you recognise the South African accent because he never introduced himself. He never gave me his name. He never said where he was from, not initially anyway. And I just picked up straight away that he was an Afrikaan. And I thought that strange in itself because I'd been grilled by some English agents pre to House introducing himself or not introducing himself. So I'd had English UK agents badgering me for several days before House turned up. But the South African slant was something I didn't expect, Barry, and it panned itself out later on. I understood that actually a craft, a blue ET craft, had crashed in South Africa several years before this interrogation, and House had been one of the agents that was sent out to recover it. And because they related that incident to the same race of people that I had interacted with, It made perfect sense afterwards, in hindsight, that he'd been sent to debrief me because he could see the relationship, and I guess he thought that I might have some information they might be able to drain from me related to that craft or related to those entities.
Was it related
to some cargo?
Was it only a debrief that you felt they wanted, or were they after something specific? Because you had the English, then you had House. I mean, were they all on some kind of theme, or was it just very general questioning?
Well, they're on a mission, Barry. I mean, I was... initially, I was as dumbstruck as you would be. I mean, sure, I'd had this experience, which was absolutely unworldly and extremely fascinating, and I could understand some agencies wanting to know all about it, but I also knew they had no right to know. I mean, I'm a sovereign entity. My own personal experiences are just that. And anybody that wants that information from me can ask nicely. But if I choose not to share it, that's my privilege. But, of course, these guys don't know how to take no for an answer, and that was one of the reasons I was locked up in the first place, I think.
Yeah.
They thought that, given that sort of form of leverage, they could scare information out of me. So it was an interrogation, but it was a debrief. It was everything. I mean, I'm not a military person. I've never had any military experience, but I should imagine someone in the military that had been sent out on an expedition and would come back and be grilled for information and what you call a debrief, but they need to download all that information to other authorities who would choose to use it in any way they should choose. So I got definitely the impression that they wanted all the information that I had in my head, and they wanted it urgently, and they wanted it in detail. And the more they pushed, the more I was determined not to give it, because I have not got a military mindset. I don't think very highly of the military in any shape or form. I don't even see the need for it. I mean, the right to kill other people with bigger and better weapons is not on my mandate. So anybody that's wanting to use anything I know to somehow inflict harm on someone else, be it an ET race or the human race, was definitely not going to get any cooperation from me. So it was my mindset that was in conflict with their mindset. So that's where all this sort of went, Barry, and that's why all this ended up being very negative for me in many ways. But strangely enough, after battling with House for several days, in fact, we struck a bond. I think we decided if it was a game of chess, it was a draw, a stalemate. And the only way forward was then to back off the aggression and try a different tact. And the tact was to be slightly more diplomatic and slightly more friendly and slightly more asking rather than demanding. And where they might have got a modicum of cooperation from me, I think I got more than my fair share back from them.
Mm.
So that's where a lot of this information that we are about to declare in this new documentary came from. And it's from a military mindset, which people should know that the extraterrestrial theme or subject is very heavily entrenched in human military affairs. So you don't have one part of this aspect without the other being involved. And that was my demise, is that I was then treated as a... in almost like a martial law.
Yeah.
So they weren't giving me any civilian rights. And as far as they were concerned, it was war, and I was just a captive, so therefore I could be treated as they perceived necessary to get the information. I was indeed a prisoner of war.
Did you feel threatened at any time?
Beg your pardon,
did you feel threatened? Did you feel in safety of your life or anything like this as you were going through this?
Of course. I mean, and they made, in no uncertain terms, they said that should I not cooperate, it could end up badly for me. And they were hinting very clearly that badly for me was 6 feet under. And when you are locked in prison and taken out of normal everyday life, there's an aspect of that which I couldn't convey to people, but you feel very fragile. You know that anything could happen to you in there. I mean, you can get into a knife fight with an inmate, no trouble at all. You don't even need a reason. You don't even need someone not to like you to be knifed in a split second, and you're dead.
Yeah.
And that can be just passed off as an accident of fact and have no relationship to this extraterrestrial event.
No, so you were in...
I was of the mind that was in store for me if I didn't cooperate.
You were in with the general prison populace, were you? You weren't in solitary confinement or anything?
Oh, no. I was in solitary initially when I was first inducted. And that was a nightmare, because I was put into the worst complex in New Zealand prison you could ever imagine. But that we'll declare that in the video too, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
But after that, I was what you call a non-threatening entity as far as, I mean, they knew I wasn't going to escape. I wasn't a danger to the general population. I was only put there on a setup anyway, so they knew there was no danger of me becoming a danger to any general population. So I wasn't locked up in solitary confinement and a danger to the prison staff. The only one in danger there was me. So they didn't care what I did. They knew they could track me down anytime they liked. There's nowhere to run when you're in the middle of a desert area in New Zealand with, you know, like there's 50 to 100 miles to the nearest civilization. And
yeah.
And I had no means to get anywhere, and I'd been picked. If I ran, I'd be picked up straight away. So
yeah, yeah.
There was no point to it, and I had no reason to even be in there. So I felt, you know, there was nothing to prove here. I mean, if I was going to be released eventually, I would be. If I was going to be killed, I would be. There was nowhere to run. So if I'd run, I probably would have been dead immediately. Yeah. So
did anybody know you were in prison?
Nobody that cared, I don't think. I mean, my immediate family and my parents, they knew that. But, of course, a convenient a story had been fabricated around my incarceration to make it a legitimate imprisonment. I mean, there was a setup there that they had to, by law, make a legal reason to imprison me. And they just set me up in some sort of a bullshit sting thing. So we don't need to go there.
No.
But it's one of those things you don't like to talk about.
Sure.
Just personal crap. And they locked me up for that reason. And then, of course, they were free to do as they liked.
Yeah, exactly. So you survived all this. I mean, this is all going to come out in the documentary. You've obviously survived because here we are talking today. So do you feel that they got everything they needed out of you?
No, I don't think they ever did, Barry, and I think that's probably the main reason I'm still alive. I mean, a dead person carrying a secret, a much-needed secret, is of no use to anyone on the planet.
But then again, dead men tell no tales.
Yes, exactly. A live person is, because the, you know, future technology may allow them to get into my head even better than they can now.
Yeah.
I guess they're figuring if there's something there that they really want and I'm dead, they can't get it. But if I'm still alive, they might come knocking on my door one day,
okay,
and whisk me away and plug me into something, and a holodeck will appear, and everything I've ever been through will be revealed. And I'm not surprised they haven't got that technology already. I think they possibly have, but I came back with a few little weapons of myself due to ET generosity. I had a few blanking devices which made it difficult for them to A, read my mind, which I think House had every intention of doing, and maybe if they hooked me up to one of their newfangled machines that will read human minds, I think I could probably negate it. So maybe they're waiting for some new technology to come out, Barry. Whatever the case is, I think a live man walking is a more valuable asset to them than a dead man buried. So that might be why I'm still here. That's just my surmise.
Mind you, you are still very much almost incarcerated in your own country because... Your passport's been taken away, you can't travel, you can't even come to Australia. And, you know, really, New Zealanders and Australians just go backwards and forwards across the ditch all the time. So they really do have
I have a passport, Barry. I have a passport. They just won't let me use it most of the time.
Oh, really? okay.
No, look, I've never succeeded in getting a visa into Australia without some covert, sort of sneaky means, and the last time we met at the Nexus conference in 2011, I came without a visa. I applied for one and they wouldn't give me one, and I just came anyway, and I duked it out at the border, if you like, at the airport. They whisked me away and locked me up there for 2 hours, asked my partner, and while they questioned me and wanted to send me back home. But I used one of those little tricks that the ETs had given me, which we won't go into here. We might reveal that in the documentary. But I have a few devices of my own which I can use consciously, subconsciously.
Excellent.
And I sort of, in my own way, created my own visa to come to the Nexus conference. So that's a story in its own. But yeah. We live in interesting times, Barry.
We do indeed. So the documentary, what stage are you at and what's happening with that?
Well, we're doing a crowdfunding Pledge Me type arrangement here in New Zealand at the moment to try and just raise a few dollars to, because we've got a professional producer sitting in a television studio which is only too willing to put a professional polish on this documentary that we make. And I'm very excited about that because whereas you might be able to sit at home in a sort of an amateur studio and do this yourself, we wanted it to have a bit more sting to it because there's a lot of amateur stuff out there and it gets lost in the crowd.
Yeah.
We feel we've got a very important story to tell for humanity, a dramatic story to tell that is so real. I mean, we've got so much background proof to say that this is not a figment of someone's imagination. This is happening. This is real. Just look at the research. Look at the facts. We need a professional approach, I think, to put this across properly and maybe go bigger from there. We're looking maybe to sell this to a commercial enterprise at some stage, Barry. This needs to be put out to the world. We just need some brave studio somewhere that will publish this in a public format that is beyond YouTube and beyond the alternate media. We need to get it mainstream somehow. Mm. This is vitally important, I think, to the human race. The whole story of my abduction adventure, but the whole format of the prison interrogations, covert agencies, the dark AI weaponry that's buried on this planet. It's all a story that needs to be revealed. It's we've called this the real X-Files in our fundraiser, because everyone said this is a genuine, real X-Files. Mm. And I've subtitled it The Final Frontier, because I think the frontier between extraterrestrial and human relationships, rather like your own endeavors with afterlife, near-death experiences and beyond, is the final frontier to the human chapter. I think we need to get out there that, A, death is not the end of the road, but also that our life on this planet is not the only one in the universe. And there are many extraterrestrial races that would love to interact with us if we get general public acceptance of the fact that it can be possible.
Yeah.
So I've got this little Pledge Me regime running here in New Zealand. We're only trying to raise a couple of $1,000. I mean, it's quite honestly loose change to most people, but I need to pay the producer. I mean, they're willing to give their time and professional studio, which needs to be hired. Even if we do all this on a volunteer basis, Barry, someone's got to foot the bill for hiring a studio and
yep.
using the proper facilities.
Yep.
You just can't do that for free.
No.
So we're hoping that the people that want to hear this information will help fund the information and to get it out there. We have ambitions that once we make this sort of trailer or promo video, as intricate as it may be, that we can sell that maybe as a forerunner to something even bigger and more professional again, so we can grow this almost into a series. There's so much information I've got in my head, Barry, and so much that's been declared that needs to be out there, that we could almost make this a series. Talk about the X-Files series. We could blow the X-Files away with the information that I've got, I can assure you.
Do you think you'll be allowed to get this information out without some kind of, shall we say, interference?
No idea, Barry. Until we try it, we won't know. And I think, as I say, I've been a little bit modest, a little bit covert on my own. I haven't pushed my own experience enough. I've felt that I've left it to other people, and I perhaps shouldn't have done that. I put a lot of weight on Duncan Rhodes, as you know, at Nexus. He's done a sterling job
yeah.
to get it as far as it has. Nobody else has tried for one inch to expose this information. And you have to wonder, Barry, why has no one else stepped up? I mean, we've got more proof that this is real than nearly any other experience on the net.
Mm.
And yet we've been sort of stymied. Every effort to get this information has seemed to have been blocked. And I don't know how or why.
As you said at the beginning of our chat, Alec, you were saying that you really haven't done a lot of pushing yourself. So maybe this is now going to be the transformational point that you need.
Well, I've decided that if I don't push it, I can't expect anyone else to push it.
Of course.
This is my first real attempt to do so, but I'm not going to do it by a half means. We're going to do this properly, or we won't do it at all. It's
yeah.
as simple as that.
All right.
I mean, because it will just get lost in the crowd, quite honestly, Barry. If we turn this to YouTube, it'll be one of 10,000, and to be honest, I'm not too sure a lot of them are kosher.
Yeah,
we
no,
don't want to be identified with bullshit stories.
Yeah.
This is real. It needs to be declared. I have to do it myself, obviously. And all I can do is push as hard and do it as professionally as possible. But without the listeners' help, it isn't going to happen. So I can't afford to fund this all the way myself. Or maybe I could, but I'd be spending all the pennies to buy the groceries every week. I'm not that well off. I'm not that well funded. I mean, I just living a very average life here. So
right.
I mean, there's no money in extraterrestrial interaction, I can assure you, Barry. In fact, just the opposite. I mean, my life experience took away everything I owned pre-1989. I lost everything I owned. I was dumped back out on the street in 1994 with not a penny to my name. thanks to the covert agencies that done a number on me. So I feel I'd already paid the price. I mean, I can't pay any more than that. And then Phoenix has come back from the ashes, and I can now at least afford to clothe myself and put a roof over my head. But I need someone else now to wade in there and help us out to fund us.
Okay, so how can people get involved, Alec, in the crowdfunding? What's the way they can get in there?
Yep. Well, if they go to that little website I set up, coev.webs.com, that's coev.webs.com, coev.webs.com, I've got the link to the crowdfunding on that in my blog. I've got a little blog on that page. It's a very good introduction to my own adventure as well. But if they go to that site and check on my blog, they'll get a link to the pledgeme.co.nz company that is running our little pledge fund. And they can get on there and donate a few dollars if they think they can afford to. The thing is that the pledge will not be activated unless we reach our goal. So they can promise to pay. If we don't reach our 2,000 goal, there will be no cost to them. And we just won't get the funding, and it's as simple as that.
Yeah, so, fair enough.
The more help we get, obviously, the better the product can be. We really need a lot more than the $2,000 we're asking for. I mean, that only hires the studio, and we're still going to be doing all this on a volunteer basis.
Yeah, $2,000 is a drop in the
ocean. Your readers might want to know that Duncan Rhodes is agreed to come on as a co-Skype-E, because we're going to have to do some of these interviews through Skype. And Duncan has agreed to come on live Skype to our studio and provide information from his point of view on not only the big picture, but also on my own experience as he would understand it and his interpretation of it. David Griffin from the UK will Skype in and give all of his personal work that he's done on his own time, his own investigations, his own research. And we'll combine all this with, we hope, maybe one or two other volunteers will get to provide information from like-minded sort of, we just need to cover a slightly wider base. To keep everybody in the loop, to see what the big picture is here. But the focus will be on my own X-Files co-evolution experience for sure, Barry.
Yeah,
but
fantastic.
Mainly focusing on the after effects, pre-1993-94, which was when I was imprisoned and incarcerated and interrogated. So that's where we'll sort of kick in, and we'll go from there.
Yeah.
So hopefully we can make a real impact with this documentary.
All righty. Good for you, Alec. Look, I'm sure our listeners will get in there and support as much as they can. I certainly urge that. Alec, it's great to catch up with you again. As you said, we haven't seen each other since that. We both were presenters at the 2011 Nexus Conference. And, I hope we can get together again soon. But keep in touch and let us know how it's going, won't you?
Certainly will, Barry. If we get the funding to get this first part up, you'll be the first to know about it. And then if we can grow that into a collective series to go into even more detail, we certainly will. So
yeah.
There's a lot of information for people to chew on here once we get the first one up and running. And I'm sure once that's done, then the rocks will start sliding. I hope so anyway.
Fair enough.
Thank you so much, Barry, for allowing me to have this little say with you, have this little chat.
No, it's great to catch up, because I'm certainly right on board with you there. And if our listeners, all the listeners of radio out there, even put a dollar in, you'd be well and truly covered for more than $2,000.
Oh, no, it's a simple little thing. It's a collective thing. I think that's what most humanity needs to really throw in and be all in the same ball court, basically.
Fair enough.
Let's hope we can get this thing rolling.
Indeed.
Thank you.
Well, I'll kick it off myself. So, okay, good on you, Alec. Good to talk to you. Alec Newell. And I think if any crowdfunding campaign deserves success for such a small amount of money, it's this one. So if you'd like to kick in, even if it's only a dollar or two, please go along to the website
and it's listed on the front of our program here. Next week we have Duncan Rhodes. Look forward to your company there.